listening to the Higher Ideas Podcast, where ideas grow. Connect on Twitter, YouTube, iTunes, or higherideas.net. Now here's your host, I.
Hello, fellow human, and welcome back to the Higher Ideas Podcast. Hey, wait a minute. Do you hear that music? That music means it's time to
honor human heroes of history.
Human lives that teach us about ourselves and encourage us to be better heroes in our own lives. Today's human hero is...
Ignaz Semmelweis.
Yes, Ignaz Semmelweis. You've heard of him, right? Good old Iggy. Of course not. Most people haven't. But that's the way of most human heroes. So let me tell you a bit about Ignaz Semmelweis and why I consider him a human hero of history. Mr. Semmelweis lived between the years 1818 and 1865. So to put it into context, he would have lived in the age of horse and carriages, bow ties and top hats, gentlemen and kingdoms, and all of that stuff. He was a Hungarian man living in Vienna. And I should actually call him Dr. Semmelweis, because this man was a very well-to-do individual. He was a doctor, a successful, high-society man. He was almost at the top of his game at the time. He was the main assistant between the professor slash head of a women's hospital in Vienna. He worked at a free birth-giving clinic, which welcomed prostitutes and homeless women. It was an effort to minimize infanticide, that is, people killing their children, or illegitimate children, or unwanted children. There was a huge problem of infanticide, finding dead babies in Vienna. And as I said, Dr. Semmelweis was practically the man in charge of this hospital, which welcomed free of charge women off of the street to help them give birth and take care of their children for a while after birth. And while this was a completely free service and really a new social effort for its time, there was also a trade-off, which was the doctors got to train off of these women. So it was also a school at the same time. It was a medical training facility which had volunteer patients. But at this prestigious hospital, which was really delivering groundbreaking social services, there was a problem. And the problem was childbed fever. It was the problem of women dying very soon after childbirth, immediately after childbirth. There was a really high rate of women falling ill from some kind of fever and dying after giving birth at these clinics. Now, there were two clinics at this hospital. One of them had a 10% mortality rate for birth-giving women, and the other clinic had a 4% mortality rate. Now, that's a big difference. And Ignaz Semmelweis himself describes women begging on their knees not to be sent to the first clinic. It had such a bad reputation. Your chances of dying in this first clinic were so high that women would give birth on the street rather than in this clinic. They would pull over or have the child in an alley and then hop on a carriage or make their way to the hospital and claim that the baby had come out on the way to the hospital so they could still claim the support and benefits after birth. But women were desperate not to give birth in this dreaded first clinic. And good old Ignaz, well, he was really bothered by this. He so much wanted to help these women and make sure they survive and their children survive that this mystery really became an obsession for him. And he even describes in his own writings that it made him so miserable that life seemed worthless. That's how much it bothered him. That's how deeply for his fellow humans he cared to be affected in this way. Now, this mystery really captivated Dr. Semmelweis's mind. Why were even street births showing a lower mortality rate for the woman and the child than in this professional medical clinic? And between these two clinics, it should be noted that the one with the highest mortality rate was the one full of doctors in training. The other clinic, Clinic 2, was midwives exclusively devoted to training women who would assist other women in childbirth. So here was this clinic that was sort of an embarrassment, supposed to be training the height of medical knowledge and profession. 10% mortality rate. And he started thinking obsessively about the reason why. He started comparing everything he could between these two clinics in the exact same hospital building. Why would there be a 10% mortality rate in one, a 4% mortality rate in the other, and a generally 4% mortality rate on the street? What was going on in this one wing of the hospital? And after eliminating all of the causes he possibly could, there was an event that happened in his life that finally gave him a clue, that finally opened his eyes to realizing the issue. It so happened that a dear friend and fellow doctor, a colleague of his, was training medical students one day on cutting open, autopsying dead bodies. And he got poked by a scalpel that his student was using, just a little cut. And wouldn't you know it, a short time later, within weeks, he was dead. Of the exact same symptoms as childbed fever, what these women were dying of. Now, of course, this man wasn't a woman giving birth, so Ignaz started putting the pieces together. And the wacky idea, the crazy idea he came up with to explain this thing happening in his hospital was this. What if, on dead bodies, there are tiny little particles of some kind, what he called cadaverous particles, some particles that are so tiny we can't see them? And what if these are getting on our hands and transferring to the women when we assist them in giving birth? Because you see, at the time, hand washing didn't happen. It wasn't necessary. There was no reason to wash your hands between sticking your filthy doctor hands into a rotting dead body and then going to the next floor and sticking your dirty doctor hands inside of a woman to pull a baby out. Now, of course, we today understand clearly what was going on here. There was bacteria on the hands of the doctors who weren't washing off and then sticking them directly into a woman giving birth. No wonder these women were dying in this wing training doctors who were sticking their hands into cadavers. But here's a little context on this era that Dr. Semmelweis lived in. It was the era where the height of medical knowledge was that the body was composed of four humors, that is, four forces within the body. And if one of these forces went out of whack because of something in your life, they didn't know what, if one of these four humors disbalanced, it would pull all the others out of balance and you'd get sick. And the doctor's task was to rebalance these four humors, usually by bloodletting. This was the fad treatment at the time. Almost every solution was just cut him open and let him bleed for a while and he'll get better. And this was regarded as the height of medical science, the height of human knowledge, the pinnacle of wisdom. But as we've discussed before on this podcast, science always historically has thought it knows almost everything. It's always been convinced of itself that it's 90% there, and just a couple of breakthroughs away, we'll understand everything. So trust us, we know more than you. We're science, everyone else is an idiot. That's how it is today, and that's how it was at the time. So let that put today into perspective for us, because at the time, they were as sure as we are today that they understood almost everything, and that's how they understood the world at the time. And here comes Ignaz Semmelweis with this idea of tiny, invisible particles. Do you realize how crazy that would have sounded? Particles you can't even see. The idea that something could be so small you can't see it was absolutely alien to the human scientific mind at the time. The microscope didn't exist. There was no concept of the microscopic world. So along comes old Iggy with this wacky idea of his. Maybe we've got these invisible particles on our hands, and maybe if we just tried to wash them off, these death rates would drop. So being the man in charge of these wings, he instituted a policy that every medical student, every doctor, after working with cadavers and before working with birthing women, should wash their hands with a solution which contains chlorine. And the only reason he picked chlorine was because he had observed that it was the best for removing the smell of cadavers from his hands after working on a dead body. So he figured, hey, why not? It gets the smell out. Let's assume it gets the particles out. So this became official policy at Dr. Semmelweis's Viennese hospital. And wouldn't you know it, the mortality rate for women in this first clinic dropped 90%. 90%! That is almost 100% rock-solid proof of his theory. Could you imagine? Could you imagine the revolutionary aha moment this man had, even not knowing that bacteria was what was at work, living organisms that we can't see? Just the idea that there were invisible particles was now proven. This was a revolution in understanding that there was some matter transferring from one body to the other that could cause illness. So in one stroke, he understood illness in a way no one had before. And at the same time, he had the cure. He began writing papers about this, showing his data, showing the theory, showing the numbers that he had gathered at his hospital over many months of this policy. The entire hospital's mortality rate had dropped 90%. He'd gone so far as to institute washing of instruments with chlorinated material. So all surgery, all medical procedures, mortality rate had drastically, undeniably dropped. He was sure he was about to become a celebrated man of science. But what happens? Well, he was ridiculed. He was shot down for his idea because it was so exotic, it was so out there that even with proof, even with evidence, even with undeniable scientific fact, he was rejected. But it wasn't only because the idea was so new. It wasn't only because the idea was so strange. It was also because the idea was insulting. Because you see, this was the era of top hats and bow ties and gentlemanly class. And one of the comebacks thrown to Ignaz in response to his new idea was, "Ridiculous! A gentleman's hands are always clean." Scientific fact. So he was rejected. He was ridiculed. He was attacked for trying to advance human understanding, trying to advance human health, to save these women that he cared so much about. Now, you'd think someone might quit here, being ridiculed, socially ostracized by the society they've worked a lifetime to support. But no, not good old Iggy. He didn't quit. He just kept writing these papers. He kept insisting on his data. He kept insisting on his proof and became increasingly frustrated. Could you imagine having the proof, knowing that you have discovered something important for humanity, and being ridiculed, ignored, ostracized by the very system you've devoted your life to? This man had trained a lifetime to be a doctor, and clearly he cared about humans and advancing medical science. And Dr. Semmelweis didn't shut up, and he didn't quit until he was fired for political reasons. He lost his prestigious position, pushed out by the pride, by the frustration of his contemporaries, who were insulted by his ideas. And even after he lost his job and retreated to his home, he found himself continually harassed by medical colleagues, by the medical institutions of the time, until he finally had to retreat to Budapest to have some peace in his life. But even from Budapest, he didn't give up. He couldn't let go of this amazing revolution he had gleaned in his open-minded thoughts. So from Budapest, he got to writing open letters to the medical establishment, increasingly angry open letters to medical journals, which were also each ignored and ridiculed and countered, until he became so frustrated, he started calling people ignoramuses and murderers. He even called for a general medical meeting to happen anywhere in Germany where he would present himself and stay until all are convinced. This guy was no quitter. This guy was going to keep pounding at this for the rest of his life until he got it into the thick skulls of the prideful, egotistical scientific community of his time to save human lives. Of course he'd call them murderers. Could you imagine the frustration? But as his efforts continued from Budapest, society started whispering about how old Ignaz Semmelweis had lost his mind. This society of colleagues he'd devoted so much of his life and effort to betrayed him and started setting him up for a takedown. And wouldn't you know it, his wife sided with society too, and she started to distance herself from him and also think that maybe he was crazy, because he wouldn't shut up about this, and it was bothering him so much, this crazy idea of his. He wouldn't let it go. So of course he must have been crazy. And so Dr. Semmelweis, former Dr. Semmelweis, became a drunk. He started sleeping around with prostitutes, wouldn't you, if your wife abandoned you like this? He became depressed and increasingly secluded. And scholars of today speculate on what might have been wrong with good old Ignaz's health. Maybe he had Alzheimer's developing over time, or maybe it was a late stage of syphilis from having worked on so many prostitutes and whatnot without any protection. Or maybe it was just overwork. Well, let me tell you something, fellow human. No! Of course it wasn't these things. This was the madness of a man ahead of his time, come to the grim realization that although he slaved for a lifetime to better the health and advancement of society, society was full of apes, egotistical fools that refused to listen to reason, all the way up to the cream of society, to the height of scientific establishment, because their egos were threatened, because their pride had been ruffled. That's what was wrong with Ignaz, the madness of every genius ahead of their time, of realizing I've got the solution, and nobody wants to hear it. That would drive anyone insane. So anyway, one day, while he was back in Vienna, an old friend came by, asking him to come along on a carriage ride to visit a new hospital. Come on, get some fresh air. Let's take your mind off this stuff. So Ignaz got on the carriage, and off they went through the streets of Vienna. Until they neared their destination, and Ignaz realized they were pulling up to the local asylum. And grimly, Dr. Semmelweis realized what was going on. It was a trap. The medical community had signed him away to an insane asylum. So immediately he tried to escape the carriage, but there were guards waiting, and they grabbed him, and they beat the shit out of him. They locked him up. They took his freedom. They put him in a cage, rather than to hear the free bird's strange song. 14 days later, he died in a cell. Ironically, it was from blood poisoning, bacterial poisoning from his wounds. And only a few years after his death, along came Louis Pasteur with his pasteurization techniques, along came the microscope and the discovery of the microscopic realm. Can you imagine at the time what a revolution this was to realize there was an entire ecology of invisible, tiny creatures living on everything, on our skin, in our bodies, everywhere, an entire ecology of life which was responsible for infections and illness, and it just changed everything. And Ignaz was ahead of his curve. Dr. Semmelweis had realized this ahead of his time through pure deduction and experimentation and experience. And even without claiming the insane extra level that these things on your hands that we can't see might be creatures that are alive, only by claiming that there was invisible matter, he had been ostracized and ridiculed and ultimately incarcerated and killed. Could you imagine if he had thought just a little further and assumed that these were alive? But in any case, just a few years later, along comes Louis Pasteur and takes all the glory and the praise and becomes the poster boy for this amazing new scientific fact, the discovery of the microscopic realm. And Ignaz Semmelweis, well, he was relegated to the trash bin of history. But of course, today there are movements to give this man his due respect. Especially in his native land, he has been honored now in several ways. His face has been placed on money, etc. But these are small reparations for this poor, poor man who lived this life of knowing something too soon and faced all of the repercussions of refusing to shut up about it, refusing to back down and be ashamed of an understanding that came to him, which he believed was real, was true, and was important to share. And part of his legacy is the little-known Semmelweis reflex, defined as a metaphor for a certain type of human behavior characterized by reflex-like rejection of new knowledge because it contradicts entrenched norms, beliefs, or paradigms. And to that list, I would also add insults egos, because really that was his crime at the time, saying things that dared to insult the gentlemen of the time. And although you might think humanity has progressed beyond this now, absolutely not. It has not. Our mastery of the human ego has not improved that much since the days of Semmelweis, and a person will still be ridiculed and rejected and ostracized today for speaking about things that are outside established scientific norms or concepts that threaten the establishment or entire communities and societies and power structures. So remember, Dr. Semmelweis, every time you think outside the box, every time you come upon an understanding that seems crazy, but at the same time seems to make sense. Because if one thing ever defined human advancement or new ideas, it's that they sound absolutely crazy. But that's only before they're proven and eventually become a matter of fact. So, Dr. Ignaz Semmelweis, this one was for you. Rest in peace and in honor, you indomitable human hero of history.